It's Tuesday, January 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the United States expresses concerns over China's buildup in the South China Sea. Chinese stock markets reach an even close on Tuesday following turbulence.
Analysts are telling us that this is largely because the government moved in to kind of shore up stock prices.
And we look back at some of the music performers who died during the past year. It's all ahead. The United States has expressed concern over China's decision to land an aircraft on Fiery Cross Reef, one of several reef reclamation efforts in the contested Spratly Islands in the South China Sea. John Kirby is a U.S. State Department spokesman.
To begin flight operations at this new airfield in a disputed area raises tensions and threatens regional stability. We again call for all claimants to halt land reclamation, further development of new facilities, and the militarization on their outposts, and instead focus on reaching agreement on acceptable behavior in disputed areas. We have made this case clear repeatedly, and we will continue to make it.
A Chinese foreign ministry spokeswoman said Monday China has full sovereignty over what it calls the Nansha Islands and its adjacent waters. China's landing of a civilian aircraft on the reef has also drawn criticism from neighboring Vietnam, which also has claims to the Spratlys. Brad Glosserman, executive director of the security think tank Pacific Forum in Hawaii, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty he's not surprised China sent an aircraft to land on an airfield it constructed.
This is what they put them out there for, and consequently, this is what we should have expected China to do. I think we, in many ways, overstate the capacity and the potential for a serious shift in the strategic balance. They have the capacity to make mischief and to create asymmetries, if you will, in some defense situations. But if the United States and regional powers refuse to accept the Chinese territorial claims upon which these islands are based and these new facilities are based, then it becomes difficult for them to, I think, employ them in a meaningful way in events of crisis.
Is this aircraft landing a precursor to an air defense zone?
The Chinese would like to think that. The problem they're going to have, of course, is the drumbeat of protest that has been greeting them since the reclamation projects began, or even since the territorial claims were made, will make it very difficult for that to be accepted as anything other than a rhetorical blast by the Chinese, if you will, rhetoric rather than the reality of an aid as they're known.
This received a strong protest from Vietnam. China dismissed it, saying this is part of Chinese territory.
The Chinese have made that claim for quite a long time. And the fact is that the Chinese will continue to make that claim. The problem, of course, is that international law and most of those countries and others refuse to recognize the validity of that claim. The Chinese need to do more than make a historic claim that these have been part of Chinese maps for hundreds of years, as they like to claim. They're going to have to make an actual legal claim that is consistent with the principles of international law, and thus far they've yet to do that.
Well, Brad, the U.S. State Department weighed in Monday, saying to begin flight operations at this new airfield in a disputed area, quote, raises tensions and threatens regional stability.
I think that's true. It's difficult at this moment to say who is responsible for, if you will, lighting the first particular fuse or throwing the first sparkler. The problem, of course, is that everyone sees this from their own particular vantage point. So just as we complain that the Chinese are unilaterally changing the status quo is one of the phrases in increasing tension, the Chinese response is that, as you mentioned, this is our territory. Secondly, they will say that we are merely responding to the reclamation activities of the Philippines, the Malaysians, and the Vietnamese that have been going on for over a decade. And third, they'll say that the Americans are stirring up tensions with their freedom of navigation operations. A great deal of this has to very much do with which particular side you're on. But nevertheless, I think we could all use with a little slowing down. And unfortunately, I don't believe we're going to see that. We're going to continue to see an incremental ratcheting up of tensions and actions of this nature.
That's Brad Glosserman of the Pacific Forum in Hawaii. On Monday, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, John McCain, criticized the Obama administration for delaying freedom of navigation patrols near the disputed islands. The guided missile destroyer USS Lassen sailed to within 11 kilometers of Subi Reef in the Spratlys in late October in what the Pentagon called a freedom of navigation patrol. Brad Glosserman says ramping up such patrols might actually prompt China to step up its activities in the region. However, he also says any attempt by China to place restrictions on what is a vital maritime route would invite strong international condemnation. During his visit to the White House in September, Chinese President Xi Jinping pledged not to militarize the artificial islands. Now looking at social media, I'm joined by International Edition's Olin Akasholu.
Hey, Sarah. Well, so far there's not a lot of people weighing in with their opinions on Twitter, but there is a lot of information sharing and retweeting of the news going on. One of the best sources right now for updates is the Associated Press, and they've been tweeting out regular news as the story develops. One story its Twitter account tweeted out recently was titled, U.S. Fleet Shrinks Even as China Grows More Aggressive, and a few people did actually respond to their tweet saying the U.S. needs to be more aggressive in asserting their own dominance in the region. There are also some specific Twitter accounts I found, South China Sea News and Spratly Island News, that have been actively tweeting out news updates on conflict in the region, and some common hashtags that people in news organizations use when they're talking and sharing news about territorial disputes are hashtag South China Sea and hashtag Spratly Islands.
Well, what's trending on social media right now?
Another big trend, which started last night, lots of social media users are interested in what President Obama will say later today when he discusses what executive action he will be taking on gun control. Last night, he sent out a string of six tweets that included some statistics on gun violence and also explained why he feels he needs to take action on the issue. Here's his last tweet. He said, "The gun lobby may be holding Congress hostage, but they can't hold America hostage. We can't accept this carnage in our communities." That was retweeted more than 5,000 times, but people are also coming out against executive action on gun control on Twitter, and those who want to tweet about the issue are including hashtag gun control in their tweets. I would expect that conversation to grow during and after President Obama speaks about the issue today.
Thanks very much, Olin. That's International Edition's Olin Akasholu. In other news, an armed group occupying a federal wildlife center in the northwestern state of Oregon since Saturday says it plans to stay in the building indefinitely. Group leaders want the release of two ranchers sentenced to additional time in prison for setting fires on federal land. They also demand return of the land, which it says the federal government grabbed from ranchers. Zlata Sahok reports.
Dwight Hammond and his son Stephen admitted they set the fires, but said they were trying to burn out invasive plant species on their own property and the flames accidentally spread onto federal land. Each has already served several months in prison for the fires, but a judge has ordered them to return to prison Monday for up to 4 years additionally, saying the original sentences were insufficient under federal laws.
I'm going to jail for 5 years for 127. Seems like a bit of an overkill.
The Hammonds have agreed to return to prison, but the new sentencing has sparked anger among ranchers and farmers across the U.S. West, who believe the government is taking too much land, undermining the livelihood of the people who depend on it.
We have tried and tried to try the prudent methods to get government to at least look at this and say, hey, there's something wrong here.
Out-of-state ranchers Ammon Bundy and his brother Ryan led about 100 people to take over the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in Oregon on Saturday. The armed militia says it wants the federal government to return the refuge to local ranchers from whom it claims the land was taken.
It is the duty of the people to put that government back in its place.
The Bundy brothers and their father Cliven, a Nevada rancher, were involved in a standoff with the government over grazing rights 2 years ago. Local residents support the rancher's cause but object to an armed intervention.
There are proper channels to go through. And bringing in a militant view, saying we're going to rise up if we don't get our way, we're going to use armed resistance, that's just not right.
The FBI is trying to resolve the standoff peacefully, but local authorities have closed nearby schools as a precaution. Zlata Sahok, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
From time to time, the internet buzzes with rumors of an approaching asteroid that just might pose a danger to us. Now, a team of British astronomers say giant comets, called centaurs, in the far reaches of our solar system may pose more of a threat to life on Earth than asteroids. The scientists say that these centaurs move through the solar system in unstable orbits past our outer planets of Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. The gravitational fields from these planets can deflect these objects into a trajectory that puts Earth in its path. The scientists calculated that one of these giant comets gets deflected into an Earthbound path every 40 to 100,000 years. While most are expected to break down into dust and larger fragments, the amount of debris created could make an Earth impact almost certain. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look back at some of the musical performers we lost in 2015. Stock markets in China have finished largely even. For more on this, I'm joined by VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide. So, Bill, there's been a lot of turbulence in China within the last couple of days, but I guess Tuesday it seemed to be a bit more on an even keel.
Yes, it certainly was. And analysts are telling us that this is largely because the government moved in to kind of shore up stock prices, you know, funneled some money into the market to stabilize it. And that, that ended what we saw on Monday, this sharp decline. That said, it was up and down. It was a roller coaster ride again. And the uncertainty remains. And one of the things that the securities analysts that we've been talking to today have pointed out to us is that this is the big question here is where is the economy going? And the answer to that is still very much unclear. And as long as that question or as long as there's no clarity on that, this kind of turmoil in the market is likely to continue.
What are the causes of this, of the fact that the economy seems to be unclear at this point? Is it because of the government or is it because of industry finances itself?
Well, there's always been a lot of distrust about the figures that the government release. And in the government's 13th five-year plan, which goes till 2020, the government is projecting that growth will continue at about 6.5 to 7%, which is a bit higher than and stronger than the kind of growth that analysts and experts expect China to continue to experience. And in fact, there are some who say China's economy has already slowed to much less than what officials are reporting. There's always been questions about, you know, the numbers. There's not a lot of transparency here about that, and that feeds into this uncertainty. The other thing that is causing some concern is that the government has increased the controls on the market. And what we saw on Monday actually was the first time that these new circuit breaker measures were put into practice. And what that is that when the market falls by, say, 5% during trading, trading is halted for 15 minutes. And if that continues and it goes to 7%, then trading is halted for the day entirely. And some say that these measures are needed to kind of stabilize the market, make trading a little bit more regular, kind of a little bit slower. But others are saying that it's not necessary, and it's actually fueling fears. It's making people wonder that, okay, the economy must be a lot worse than the government is saying, because they've instituted these measures to really tighten down on the movements of the stock indexes.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Bill. That's VOA's Beijing correspondent, Bill Ide. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. As the music world still reels from the New Year's Day loss of singing great Natalie Cole, International Edition's Jim Stevenson looks back at 2015 with VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald to remember some of the iconic musicians who remain with us only through their recordings.
Jim, we lost a lot of great musical talent, and a few of them were especially important to me. Mm-hmm. Back in February, Leslie Gore, who sang It's My Party, passed away from cancer at age 68. And Leslie was really one of the pioneering feminists in pop music. And It's My Party is interesting because it was one of Quincy Jones' first productions. Another great artist who died in 2015 was Percy Sledge. Mm. And he sang When a Man Loves a Woman. When a man loves a woman, can't keep his mind on nothing else. And I guess you could say that Percy was a one-hit wonder, but what a hit, because that's one of the enduring songs of the past half century. Percy died of cancer in April at 74. Another of the great soul singers from the early 60s was Benny King. He did Stand By Me. He died of natural causes in April at age 76. And in May, B.B. King passed away at age 89. Now, B.B. had been suffering from diabetes for many years, but he still maintained a tireless touring schedule. I mean, he was playing his guitar, Lucille, right up to the end. And what a great recorded legacy he's going to leave behind. Another great musician was jazz saxophonist Ornette Coleman. I mean, he never had any pop hits, but he was incredibly influential in the field of jazz. And he died of cardiac arrest in June at age 85. And then the month of December brought two huge losses to the rock community. On December 3rd, Scott Weiland passed away from cardiac arrest. He was found dead on his tour bus. He was 48 years old. Scott had sung with Stone Temple Pilots and Velvet Revolver. He was on tour with his latest band, The Wildabouts. And then on Monday the 28th, Lemmy Kilmister, the leader of Motorhead, died of cancer at age 70. Mm-hmm. And so I want to tip my hat to all of these great musicians who left us in 2015.
Absolutely. And we are fortunate because we are the beneficiaries of all the recorded music that they left behind. And we will continue to listen to all of that.
It's a cliche often to say they live on, but they do.
And, you know, you talk about artists who not only were big in their own right, but had such deep influences throughout the industry. Alan Toussaint also passing away this year.
Yes, absolutely. And Alan Toussaint, by the way, if you're a fan of New Orleans music, you should check out Dave Grohl's documentary, Sonic Highways, where the Foo Fighters go to eight different cities around the United States and record there and talk with figures in the city's musical histories. Alan Toussaint was very prominently featured in the New Orleans episode.
Go out and check the Top 20 each week right here on VOA with Ray McDonald. And you can find him on Twitter,
Ray on the Hits.
Thanks so much, Ray, for stopping by. Have a happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Jim.
Well, we certainly lost a number of great performers in the last year. However, as Jim and Ray were saying, their music will live on through recordings. Well, please remember to look at our website. You can look at it, access it, rather, at voanews.com. Also, if you happen to be on Twitter, this show, International Edition, you can look at it as at VOA underscore IE. I have my own Twitter account. That's at VOA Williams. And on Facebook, we're on VOA Asia. That's our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The board of directors of the Millennium Challenge Corporation recently held its quarterly meeting and approved three countries as eligible for compacts and two countries as eligible for threshold programs. MCC is an independent U.S. government agency working to reduce global poverty through economic growth. Three of the five countries are new partners for MCC, and all have worked hard to improve their performance on MCC's scorecard, which measures countries' commitment to ruling justly, economic freedom, and investing in their people. The board selected Côte d'Ivoire, Kosovo, and Senegal as newly eligible for compacts. Côte d'Ivoire, which was selected in December 2014 for a threshold program, will now transition into the compact program after showing continued improvement on its scorecard and achieving greater political stability. Kosovo, which passed MCC's scorecard for the first time after making progress on democratic rights, is a new partner for MCC. Senegal successfully completed its first MCC compact in September and demonstrated improved scorecard performance over the life of the partnership. In both Senegal and Côte d'Ivoire, the board recommended that MCC explore potential investments that address regional obstacles to economic growth, in addition to domestic investments, while recognizing the need for statutory authority to optimize regional impact. The board also selected Togo and Sri Lanka to develop MCC threshold programs. Togo has shown a clear upward trajectory on overall scorecard performance over the past few years. Sri Lanka has embarked on a remarkable effort over the past year to reinvigorate its democratic institutions, improve governance, and restore protection of human rights. Nepal, Niger, and the Philippines were reselected by the board to continue developing their compacts. The board reselects all countries in compact development as part of the annual selection process. The board deferred a vote on the reselection of Tanzania and Lesotho for compact eligibility until relevant governance concerns in both countries have been addressed. Finally, the board reaffirmed its commitment to developing a compact with Mongolia and its support for a potential strategic partnership with India to advance economic growth and poverty reduction in South Asia. The United States, through the Millennium Challenge Corporation, is proud to work with its partners, new and old, in meeting the development challenges in the years ahead.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.